Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So lots of people resort to popping a pill to get to sleep, many more than you might think. But what are the risks and what are the benefits? And is sleeping on a pill better than not sleeping at all? Today we're starting a new series on sleep. Each week this month we'll be talking to Alice Park, Time Magazine staff writer who covers health and medicine, about the trials and tribulations of getting to sleep. Today's topic, sleeping pills, and a new study that links sleeping pills with early death. Alice Park, welcome to WNYC Today. Thanks for doing the series with us. I'm looking forward to it.
My pleasure. Good morning.
So you wrote a piece for Time with the headline, Study, Sleeping Pills Linked with Early Death. Do you think this study is going to keep people up at night? Ha ha. And what is this new study?
Well, it might, and the researchers behind it really are concerned about the risk that they found. So what they did was they took a large number of people from a major health system, 10,500 people, which is very large for a study, and they looked at their prescriptions for sleeping pills and then compared their death rates over a period of about from 2002 to 2007. So these people were on the sleeping pills for an average about 2.5 years or so. And they found that indeed the people, they compared these people then to another very large group of patients who were matched for similar age, health issues, and lifestyles. And it turned out that the people who were prescribed sleeping pills actually had up to a 4 times higher risk of dying in the 2.5 years of the study than the people who weren't prescribed the pills.
But is this causation or is this association? You know, my public health background skepticism kicks in right away. And so I wonder what sleeping pills did the study take into consideration? Are we talking about just the famous ones like Ambien and Lunesta that we see advertised on television? Or are we talking about things like Tylenol PM? People take Benadryl to go to sleep. There are antidepressants, anti-anxieties that also let people sleep. Melatonin. What was included?
Well, you're very right to be skeptical about the causation. This is not causation. This does not mean that people who will take sleeping pills will definitely have an increased risk of dying early. This is an association, which means that it's a link that might be a link between the sleeping pills and an early death, or it might indicate something sort of deeper in terms of why people are taking the sleeping pills. And that the reason for that might be the reason for the early death. What this study did was it addressed some of the concerns that previous studies that had found a similar slight increased risk in death had done. Now, previous studies did not distinguish the types of sleeping pills from things like you mentioned, tranquilizers and other types of sedatives. They just sort of took the whole kind of universe of things that people took to help them sleep. This study did focus specifically on what they call hypnotics. So these are things like benzodiazepines, things like Ambien and Restoril and Lunesta, some of the shorter acting, more recent sleeping aids. The previous studies also did not look at dose, how much of the sleeping aids people were prescribed. And so this study did. They broke it down by dose, by type of pill, and it turned out that the relationship was interesting because the more people were prescribed, the more pills they were prescribed, the more their risk of early death increased.
And yet, I wonder about some of the other possible causes here. If people are depressed and they take sleeping medication for that, well, depression I think is also linked with disease and early death. Not sleeping, by the way, is linked with disease and early death, cardiac problems and whatever. So how does somebody make an informed decision for themselves if they're taking or considering taking sleep medication as to whether it's better for them or worse for them?
Well, this study also did look at what they call confounding factors, so other kind of health factors that are associated with an increased risk of early death. They looked at 12 classes of chronic illnesses like heart disease, hypertension, diabetes, kidney disease, and so forth. And they matched the people who were prescribed sleeping pills with people who were not prescribed sleeping pills who had similar diagnoses. And the relationship continued, which gave the researchers, you know, more confidence that this was something that was worth looking into. And indeed, one of the things they were not able to do was look at mental illnesses, depression, and the role that psychiatric illnesses might play in either leading people to need sleeping pills or whether they indeed lead to an increased risk of death. However, previous studies have shown that things like depression, while they do have a slight increased risk of death, can't explain this whole fourfold increase that this study found.
Alice Park, my guest on WNYC, Time Magazine health and medicine reporter. She'll be doing a series with us every Thursday this month on sleep and getting to sleep. And listeners, we can sneak in a call or two right now on sleeping medications, 212-433-WNYC, if you want to call in right now on side effects, effectiveness, questions you have about this study, 212-433-WNYC. You can call on the air right now. And also, we would like to know what topics, sleep issues, you would like to hear us discuss later in the month. Maybe how you get your kids to sleep, the benefits or harm of napping, whatever you would like to hear about when it comes to sleep, go to our website and post a suggestion. Go to WNYC.org and click on Brian Lehrschel. Let's see, the stats, 6 to 10% of adult Americans are taking some type of sleep medication, according to your article. Has that been steadily rising?
It has been rising, and what's interesting is it's obviously partly due to the increased availability of shorter acting and more effective sleeping aids, but the fact that more people are taking sleeping aids doesn't mean that we're sleeping better, because studies show that people who take sleeping aids the following day when they come into a lab for tests of cognitive skills and other types of skills, they actually don't perform as well as people who don't take sleeping aids and are perhaps tossing and turning a bit with insomnia. And yet these people who take the sleeping aids report feeling more alert and better. So there's some kind of psychological effect here of having the pills, and people who use them sort of have an exaggerated sense of how effective they are.
Those ads on TV, and we have a comment on our website from a listener who says, Bernie from Brooklyn, sleeping pills are designated to get you to sleep for 8 hours. If you eat half of one, does that mean 4 hours? And, if you watch television and you see those Ambien ads and they say only take Ambien if you have a full 8 hours to dedicate to sleep. So what's your answer to Bernie from Brooklyn?
Well, I think the big issue is that whenever you've got a prescription medication, you should take it as indicated. Cutting a pill in half does not mean it's going to be half as effective. The issue here with the sleeping aids is that they work to really slow down brain activity to help you sleep. And the concern is that if you don't have sort of 7 to 8 hours set aside and you try to do activities like driving or do something, you may get very drowsy and it could get dangerous.
Let's take a phone call. Anne in the East Village. You're on WNYC. Hi, Anne.
Good morning. I drink red wine and have cheese before, during, and after dinner, and I sleep like a baby.
Now, as somebody who has raised two children to teenage now, I can tell you that sleep like a baby means you wake up every 2 hours crying and screaming.
No, I sleep very, very well.
I know what you mean, Anne. I'm just kidding. But for people, Alice, considering sleep medication, there are alternatives, right? I mean, there are things that people, and I'm not trying to be moralistic about sleep medication. I think people should probably, consider the risks and do what they need to do to help them. But there are things that people can try. Don't drink coffee. She says drink alcohol. Some people say don't drink alcohol too close to bed. Don't use your computer in bed. There are other non-sleeping pill solutions that people can at least try, right?
There are. Now, in most cases, people who are prescribed sleeping pills, particularly in larger doses and higher quantities, generally have sort of extended and consistent problems with insomnia. But yes, there are certainly things that you can try. People also say exercising regularly will help your body to sort of need that period of rest and go to sleep. So obviously, in consultation with your doctor, you should discuss which ones are right for you and whether, you know, if none of these work, then you might discuss with him or her whether a sleeping aid is necessary.
Chris in Westchester, you're on WNYC. Hi, Chris.
Hey, good morning, Brian. I was just wondering, my wife is a graduate student, super demanding program. She's under loads of stress and she's suffering from anxiety. So that's totally messing with her sleep. And she also, I wanted to know, you know, what the role of anxiety plays in sleep deprivation. And also, she takes melatonin. That's totally natural, no big deal, but it doesn't seem to be super effective like a sleeping pill would.
Alice, melatonin?
Well, melatonin is the natural hormone that sort of increases during sleep. And so, you know, there have been some studies showing that for some people it may help to help them get to sleep. Anxiety is certainly one of the reasons why we see sort of increasing numbers of people relying on sleep aids. But and stress is another one. So these are all issues, reasons why we're staying up at night. It's just a matter of finding the right answer for you. So as you said, if melatonin doesn't work, then you know, perhaps she should try some of the other alternatives or discuss with her doctor, you know, what the best way might be for her to try to get some more rest at night.
Comment on melatonin from our webpage. John from Ridge on the island says, every over-the-counter sleeping pill I've ever tried, including melatonin, works the first couple of times, but then it starts to make me agitated to the point that I'm tired but can't sleep. Why is that, he asks. So is that something that you've heard as a fairly common thing?
Well, I don't know about the over-the-counter aids, but certainly for the prescription medications, there is a sort of, you know, tolerance effects so that they do lose their effectiveness after the first few weeks, which is why they're not really designed for long-term use. I'm not as familiar with the over-the-counter and how they work and so whether there might be the same sort of tolerance building, but it makes sense if they tap into the same mechanisms mm-hmm. that help us sleep.
Chelsea in Montclair, you're on WNYC. Hi, Chelsea.
Actually, my name is Chelsea.
I'm sorry.
And good morning. I'm asking a question about the research, and the question is whether the people that died, did they have a similar cause of death, and whether they died in the sleep, assuming that they were long-term users of the sleeping pills.
Well, they were on average using them for about they were followed for about 2.5 years, and some of these medications are only indicated for a few weeks at a time. The people died of all different causes, and the people who were prescribed the sleeping pills died of similar causes as those who weren't.
And let's get one more call in. We're almost out of time. Here's a doctor in Island Heights, Charles. You're on WNYC. Real quick,
Hi,
doc.
Brian.
Hi, real quick.
I one of the things that they don't take into effect when prescribing is that the same dose may not be eliminated in one single day, particularly in older people, and may simply pile up in their system. So basically, ultimately, they're overdosed.
Charles, that's a great question. And we also have another listener who we're not going to have time to put on the air asking about gender differences. So do you know of age differences and gender differences in terms of the impact of sleeping pills?
In this study, they controlled for both age and gender and did not find that it had much of an effect.
And in general, in terms of the way people metabolize or dose that people need or, you know, side effects, whatever?
In terms of the studies that have been done so far on the sleeping aids, there does not seem to be a major significant difference between either men and women or according to age.
All right. Alice Park, Time Magazine health and medicine reporter. She will be joining us every Thursday this month to talk about sleep issues. And again, listeners, what sleep issue would you most like us to discuss in this series? Go to our webpage, WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehr Show with your suggestions. And Alice Park, I'll talk to you next Thursday. Good start.
Looking forward to it.
Brian Lehr on WNYC. Bob Henley next. Stay with us.